Hello, this is Wendy Bauer, reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, July 25th, 2016. We will begin our second half-hour reading with the death notices, beginning with the funerals for today, Monday, July 25th, 2016. Sandra J. Berry, 76, of Decatur, service at 11 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Grace Ann Duffield, 90, of Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, formerly of Decatur, service at 11 a.m. in Most Sacred Heart Catholic Church, Eureka, Missouri. Niall Wendell Page, 101, of Shelbyville, service at 11 a.m. in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville. And the current obituaries, Andy Armour of Flora, Illinois. Andy Armour, age 86, of Flora, Illinois, previously of Sullivan, passed away Friday, July 22, 2016, at his home in Flora. A funeral service for Andy Armour will be at 12 noon Tuesday, July 26, 2016, at Frank and Bright Funeral Home, Flora, with visitation from 11 a.m. until the hour of service at the funeral home. Interment will be in Rusk Cemetery, Flora. Memorial donations may be given to Clay County Cancer Crusaders or Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, and these will be accepted at the funeral home. Mary Ellen Brown, Decatur. Mary Ellen Brown, 87, of Decatur, passed away Friday, July 22, 2016, in McKinley Court. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Mary Brown will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 27, 2016, at Union Cemetery in Oriana. Wilma B. Camfield, 84, of Shelbyville. Wilma B. Camfield of Shelbyville, formerly of Findlay, passed away on Saturday, July 23, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Visitation will be Tuesday, July 26, 2016, from 1 p.m. until the time of service at 2:30 p.m. at Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Shelbyville. Burial will follow in Glenwood Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Findlay Christian Church or the Johnson University in Knoxville, Tennessee. Cecilia Marquis, Decatur. Cecilia Marquis, 65, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, July 21, 2016, in Fairhaven Christian Home. Services to celebrate Cecilia's life will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 26, 2016, in Graceland Cemetery. Edna Mae Reynolds, Clinton. Edna Mae Reynolds, 99, of Clinton, Illinois, formerly of DeWitt, Illinois, passed away at 2:35 p.m. on July 22, 2016, at her home in Clinton. No services are planned at this time. Calvert Funeral Home of Clinton, Illinois, assisted the family with cremation rites. Memorials may be directed to the DeWitt County Animal Shelter. Charlotte Ann Ensley. Charlotte Chucky Ann Ensley passed away Sunday, July 10, 2016, in Jacksonville, Florida. She was born in Decatur in 1944. Memorial donations can be made to the American Heart Association. Sharon Ann Holman, Mount Zion. Sharon Ann Macklin Holman, 75, of Mount Zion, passed away Thursday, July 21st, 2016, in St. Mary's Hospital. Mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 27th, 2016, in Holy Family Catholic Church, 2400 South Franklin Street Road, Decatur. Per Sharon's wishes, there will be no visitation prior to the Mass. Burial will immediately follow in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Holy Family Catholic Church or Holy Family Catholic School. L. Pauline Lawrence, Arcola. L. Pauline Lawrence, 93, of Arcola, passed away at 6:45 p.m. on Thursday, July 21, 2016, at her residence. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, July 26, 2016, at the Walnut Grove Christian Church, 12930 East County Road 1700 North, Arcola, Illinois. Burial will follow in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. on Monday, July 25, 2016, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main in Arcola. Memorials may be made to the Walnut Grove Christian Church, the Arcola Sports Boosters, or the American Cancer Society. Michael Wayne Martin, Decatur. Michael Wayne Martin, 63, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, July 16, 2016, in his home. Graveside service to celebrate Michael's life will be at 1 o'clock p.m. Thursday, July 28, 2016, in Macon County Memorial Park. Judith Ann McDavitt Weaver. Judith Ann Judy McDavitt Weaver, 67, of Monticello, Illinois, formerly of the Osmond and Bellflower area, passed away at 12:55 a.m. Friday, July 22, 2016, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana, Illinois. A graveside memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 27, 2016, at Bellflower Township Cemetery, Bellflower, Illinois. Following the graveside service, a celebration of life gathering will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Monticello Bowl, Monticello, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in memory of Judith Ann Weaver. Terry L. Moses, Decatur. Terry L. Crabtree Moses, 60, of Decatur, died at 10:50 p.m. Thursday, July 7, 2016, in St. Mary's Hospital. A graveside service to celebrate her life will be at 11 a.m. Monday, August 1, 2016, at North Fork Cemetery. There will be no visitation. Memorials, if desired, may be made to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Iris Faye Walker Pritz, of Morton, Illinois. Iris Faye Walker, of Morton, Illinois, died on Tuesday, July 19, 2016, in Evanston, Illinois. Cremation will be accorded and a celebration of her life will be held at her home in Morton, Illinois, 907 Sunset Road, on Saturday, November 5, 2016. Open house from 2 to 5 p.m. with memorial service at 3:30 p.m. Her family requests that any donations be made to the Morton Community Foundation's Faye Walker Community Care Endowment Fund or a charity of your choice. Sandra J. Crawley Berry, Decatur. Sandra J. Crawley Berry, 76, of Decatur, passed away on Wednesday, July 20, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral service to celebrate Sandra's life will be at 11 a.m. Monday, July 25, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation was from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday in the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to Macon County Animal Shelter. Glenn William Hunter, Shelbyville. Glenn William Bill Hunter, 75, of Shelbyville, Illinois, formerly of Findlay, Illinois, died at 12:59 p.m. Thursday, July 21, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur, Illinois. A memorial service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, July 26, 2016, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. Casual attire is requested. Burial will follow in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be given to Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Saving Orphaned Animals, or Shriners Hospital for Children. James Jim Lomar Forsyth. James H. Lomar, 87, of Forsyth, Illinois, died at Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur, Illinois, on Wednesday, July 20th, 2016, at 1:35 p.m. Graveside services will be held on Friday, July 29th, 2016, at 3 p.m. at Benelde Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Alzheimer's Association. Niall Wendell Page, Shelbyville. Niall Wendell Page, 101, of Shelbyville, Illinois, formerly of Clarksburg, Illinois, died at 1:10 p.m. Thursday, July 21st, 2016, in Shelbyville Manor. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, July 25th, 2016, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Mount Carmel Cemetery near Shelbyville, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the Shelbyville Manor. Wathan Mark Wells, Shelbyville. Wathan Mark Wells, 57, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 12:15 p.m. Thursday, July 21st, 2016. A memorial service was held at 3 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, July 23rd. Memorials may be given to the charity of donor's choice. And we'll now go to the A3 briefs. The local page has the following briefs. First from Casey, cyclist hurt, dragged. A motorcyclist was airlifted to a hospital Sunday after colliding with a semi-truck on Interstate 70 near Casey and being dragged 100 feet along the roadway with his machine. Illinois State Police said Carl Bird, 67, of Ontario, Canada, was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital in Champaign following the 2 p.m. accident on the I-70 eastbound lanes. An update on his condition was not available Sunday night. Police reports said Bird was merging onto the interstate when he failed to yield to the truck and hit the rear of the trailer in a one-lane construction zone. He was ticketed for failure to yield right-of-way. The truck was driven by Chedley Benalja, 40, from Etters, Pennsylvania, who was not listed as being hurt. H&R Photo Contest. Vacation photographs often capture a perfect moment in a favorite place. Send us your best vacation photos now for a chance to win up to $1,000 in our Destinations Photo Contest. The top photographs submitted will also be featured in a national publication reaching more than 1 million households. Readers across the country will be able to vote for their favorite photos, and photographers who submit entries will be eligible for one of three top prizes, $1,000 for first place, $500 for second, and $250 for third. Photos can be submitted now through Sunday, August 7th. Many of the best photographs will be included in a special 20-page Destinations travel section that will be published Wednesday, August 24th, and distributed in Lee Enterprises newspapers throughout the U.S. To enter, visit herald-review.com/travel. Upload your favorite vacation photo now and let your friends know that the contest voting period is August 8th to 11th. And finally, from Chicago, from the A3 briefs, Vigil for Police. A group of Chicago police officers and family members held a prayer vigil outside a police district station for an officer shot last week and others killed nationwide in recent weeks. Those attending the event said it was meant as a show of solidarity for law enforcement and their families. Blue Lives Matter posters were on display, and small children held posters reading, "We Love Police." And also from the local page, a quick review of the meeting calendar. Allison Petty reports that today, Harristown Village Board of Trustees meets at 7 p.m. in the Village Hall, 185 North Kembark Street. NAACP Decatur Branch Executive Board meets at 6 p.m. Branch at 7 p.m. Dr. George Coates Community Center, 550 South Greenwood Avenue. The Whitmore-Oakley Multi-Township Board meets at 6 p.m., 204 West Bower Street, Oriana. On Tuesday, the Long Creek Township Board of Trustees meets at 5 p.m. in the Township Boardroom, 2610 Salem School Road in Decatur. On Wednesday, Macon County Board Transportation Committee meets at 5:30 p.m., room 514 Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street in Decatur. And on Thursday, the Decatur Traffic and Parking Commission at 4 p.m. in the Council Chambers, third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza, and the Macon County Board Justice Committee meets at 3 p.m. in room 514, Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street in Decatur. And the two columnists from the opinion page, first we'll start with Jonah Goldberg, "Trump Loves the Ceremony," from Cleveland. In normal times, the report this week that Donald Trump wanted John Kasich to be the real president would have made more of a splash. According to Kasich aides, the Trump campaign desperately wanted the Ohio governor to be his running mate. Kasich, out of concern for his eternal soul or his political future, resisted the idea. But the Trump campaign pressed harder. At one point, Donald Trump Jr. reached out with an amazing offer, according to the New York Times. How would Kasich like to be the most powerful vice president in American history? If elected, Trump would put Kasich in charge of two broad areas of policymaking. Now, if a normal person were asked to guess which two, he or she might venture counterterrorism and health care, or defense and taxes. But that's thinking small, and Donald Trump doesn't think small. Donald Trump Jr. offered Kasich both foreign policy and domestic policy. What the hell would Trump do? The aide reportedly asked Trump the Younger. He would make America great again, Trump Jr. casually replied, according to a story in the Columbus Dispatch. When I first read that, I couldn't help but think of that scene in The Blues Brothers where Dan Aykroyd asks the manager of a honky-tonk what kind of music is played there. The manager replies, "Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western." There's no love lost between the Kasich and Trump camps, so it's fair to be skeptical of the story. The only thing is there are lots of rumors among Republican politicians and staffers that back it up. Trump's not interested in policy. He's fine with outsourcing it to congressional Republicans and to his cabinet secretaries. Trump wants to do the fun stuff. He wants to give cool speeches and fly around in a better plane. He wants the respect that comes with being president. He doesn't want to do the hard stuff. For those willing to see, there's been a lot of evidence of that all along. He said he won't even start learning about policy until he's elected. That Trump doesn't know or care much about public policy is obvious to literally every human being who knows anything about public policy. One could fill books with examples of him talking about articles of the Constitution that don't exist, events that never took place, and proposals that make no sense. According to a deeply reported account in GQ, Trump's daily briefing packet amounts to a printout of a Google News search of articles mentioning Donald J. Trump. This is also how he runs his business. He's a marketer and a branding maven. Other businessmen and subcontractors do the heavy lifting. Woodrow Wilson was the first to see the president as a kind of monarchical cheerleader. He was the first commander-in-chief to insist that a president must impose a vision on the country. Wilson saw the job as that of a propagandist-in-chief. Richard Neustadt, the titan of presidential studies, echoed this in his landmark book, Presidential Power. Because modern presidents are expected to do so much more than what their constitutional powers can achieve, they must mold public opinion. Presidential power, Neustadt famously wrote, is the power to persuade. It's unlikely that Trump knows any of that, but that doesn't mean he's not onto something about the presidency. Barack Obama, after all, has spent much of his presidency trying to build a grassroots movement to force change on Washington that he couldn't achieve from the White House. Many Republicans I've talked to find Trump's willingness to outsource actual policymaking to Mike Pence or Paul Ryan reassuring, and in a sense it is. But it overlooks a problem, because there is so much power in a president's words matter. Just this week, the GOP nominee suggested that he would not honor our commitments to NATO if Russia attacked our allies in the Baltics. Those words are dangerous from a nominee. They would be catastrophic from a president. A president with a verbal hair trigger, one who doesn't know enough to know what not to say, could ignite a financial crisis or a war. If Trump could be trusted or simply play a ceremonial role, serving as a kind of corporate motivational speaker for the country, I might board the Trump train, but can anyone say with confidence that Trump has the discipline to do anything of the sort? And the second columnist on the opinion page is Eugene Robinson. Democrat bar is pretty low this week. The Republican National Convention wasn't a complete disaster, but only because Mike Pence showed signs of being a more able running mate than many thought. Other than that, hot mess, dumpster fire, train wreck. Pick your overused metaphor. It was huge, but not in a good way. Political conventions are supposed to stoke and showcase party unity behind a presidential nominee whose virtues are unalloyed. But the GOP has no such unity and no such nominee. In Cleveland, Donald Trump was like a corporate raider who engineered a hostile takeover and then, at his first board meeting, put his feet up on the table and couldn't remember anybody's name. Party loyalists and Trump family retainers will try to spin Cleveland as some sort of triumph. But seriously, when has it ever been beneficial for a candidate to be upstaged at his convention by his chief rival? It didn't help Gerald Ford that Ronald Reagan stole the show in 1976, or Jimmy Carter that Ted Kennedy captured delegates' hearts in 1980. It is true that Ted Cruz, unlike those earlier usurpers, was booed off the stage Wednesday night when he refused to endorse Trump. But Nelson Rockefeller was booed too in 1964, and that year's conquering outsider Barry Goldwater went down to crushing defeat. Why were convention delegates so angry at Cruz? Because the truth hurts. Republicans have nominated for president a boorish bully who does not share their conservative philosophy, who appears, in fact, to have no fixed philosophy at all. Cruz said Thursday that he refused to behave like a servile puppy dog towards someone like Trump. He implied that many in the convention hall were obediently sitting up and rolling over for a very bad man. Trump relentlessly touts his managerial skill, but this week he showed that he can't even run a decent-sized meeting. Amateur hour began Monday on opening night when Trump's wife Melania delivered a well-reviewed speech, parts of which, it turned out, were plagiarized from Michelle Obama's address to the 2008 Democratic Convention. What followed was a case study in political malpractice. Trump campaign aides and Republican spokespeople spent all day Tuesday denying the obvious word theft, violating the first rule of damage control: apologize quickly and move on. It wasn't until Wednesday that an in-house Trump Organization employee fell on her sword and took responsibility. It also wasn't until Wednesday that delegates and television viewers heard a lineup of speakers spend meaningful time saying nice things about Trump. For the first 2 days, aside from Melania Trump's speech, the focus was almost exclusively on painting Hillary Clinton as pure evil, I mean that literally. Ben Carson, going way off script, tried to associate the former First Lady, U.S. Senator, and Secretary of State with Lucifer. The repeated chants of lock her up were those of a political lynch mob, not a serious political gathering. But antipathy toward Clinton is really the only common ground that GOP regulars share with a party's nominee. Cruz's defiance made it impossible to paper over the fact that Trump, on a whole range of issues, simply does not agree with the Republican orthodoxy. The one positive development for the party, I thought, was Pence's debut on the national stage. He was smooth and reassuring, all rounded edges as opposed to Trump's spikes. I'm not sure how much he'll help the ticket on the trail and the debate stage, but I don't think he'll hurt. Bottom line, the GOP served up a hanging curveball for Democrats to smash into the upper deck if they manage not to whiff. Requirements for a successful convention next week in Philadelphia are modest. First, the Democrats need to display real party unity rather than the simulated kind. Voters will be able to tell the difference. To that end, the speech by Bernie Sanders tonight will be tremendously important. If he goes all in for Clinton and shows some enthusiasm about it, the Democratic Party's built-in demographic and electoral college advantages will be able to kick in. Beyond that, the convention needs to portray Clinton as a human being rather than the grotesque caricature painted by Republicans. Draw a contrast between her vast experience and Trump's dangerous ignorance. Demonstrate that she was enlightened rather than annoyed by the issues Sanders raised, and paint a positive vision of the nation's future. It is not, frankly, that high a bar. If Democrats can't make Philadelphia better than Cleveland, they don't deserve to win. And from the education page, Normal, from Lenore Sabota, Lee News Service writer, ISU to review policies following alleged sex assault. Illinois State University officials view the alleged sexual assault of a visiting student during the preview orientation as an isolated incident, but that won't stop them from reviewing the circumstances surrounding it. Jay Groves, ISU chief of staff, said Friday that those involved review the program every year after it concludes to see if changes are needed, and that evaluation will continue. Preview is a two-day summer program that is required for incoming freshmen. Sessions started June 7th and ended Thursday. A father and son from Chicago have been charged in connection with a sexual assault that is alleged to have occurred Tuesday night at Hewitt Hall, the residence hall where Preview participants were staying. The son and the alleged victim, who reported the incident the following morning, were incoming students. Sean Childs, Jr., 19, is charged with 4 counts of criminal sexual assault. His father, Sean Charles, Sr., 40, is charged with possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver for allegedly putting ecstasy in the woman's soda. Grove said it is difficult to prevent such an extreme event from happening. You don't expect a parent to be involved in a situation like this, said Groves, noting that during the school year, parents come and visit all the time. Parents stay on separate floors from students involved in Preview, with male and female students staying on separate floors too, said Stacy Mwilimbwe, director of University Housing Services. She said 3 or 4 Preview guides who are currently enrolled ISU students stay on the floor with the incoming students during Preview, and housing staff members are also present. The two men were arrested as they were about to board a train back to Chicago. Both are being held in McLean County Jail, awaiting a July 29th arraignment. And that's it for the news from the Decatur Herald and Review. Today, July 25th, 2016. This has been Wendy Bauer, and I look forward to reading with you again in the future. Thank you.